Stevenson down to Sabonis, posting Smith. Left block, back of the goal, bounces, right hand, turns, fakes, got Smith in the air and laid it in.
See, there's a low post game Sabonis has got.
The Indiana Pacers open up their season in 2 days. If you're listening to this when we're recording on a Monday, Pat Boylan alongside Jeremiah Johnson. It's the Sideline Guys podcast season preview, and we had intended this to be as we normally do. We come up with a handful of topics. We just kind of see where the conversation goes. And thanks to the help of at Pacers, and I think the fans just as well, we got so many questions in that we're going to hit on a couple topics that we want to hit on right off the bat here, and then we're just going to make this a preseason mailbag first edition of the podcast. But I don't know about you. I always like answering questions that directly come from people and not try to sit and guess what people might like to know. We've got six, seven, eight questions here, and we're going to be hitting those here on the podcast.
Good to be with you once again, Pat, and I was pleased to see the response from fans, and it does back up what I've been feeling and seeing and really hearing from fans over the first 3 weeks of training camp and then really over the entire offseason. Is there's a lot of interest in this team in and around Central Indiana. I think you have to have a little bit of a distinction in that fans in Indiana are very excited about this team. I think nationally and globally, fans might be sleeping a little bit on what this team can accomplish. And ultimately, the proof will be in what happens on the floor. But I think with what we've seen in the preseason and when we talk to the players, there's a real genuine enthusiasm for each other from the players and from the fans for looking forward to seeing the style of basketball that this team will play with. So tip of the cap to the fans of the Sideline Guys podcast for interacting and offering some comments and some questions, and let's go.
So a couple things we wanted to hit on before we got to the questions. I'm curious your thoughts of training camp. There were so many storylines coming into it because the team was so new, there was so much turnover, and for the first time, at least since I've been here, there wasn't a clear cut who is going to make and who is going to miss line. And we found out over the weekend they're keeping 14. It's really 16 if you consider the two-way guys, but they do have some ability to improvise if they want, because they're keeping a roster spot open. And in those 14 is Damian Wilkins, the 37-year-old who has made the team and frankly made it with a spot to spare.
I remember when Damian Wilkins was signed, it was one of those July or August signings, the kind where you think, oh, that's just an extra body, a warm body for training camp. And he's been referenced in conversations as similar to Rasul Butler. I was thinking about Tony Douglas, if you remember a couple of years ago. Tony Douglas, I thought, had a really good training camp, but then still, despite what looked like maybe a need for a backup veteran type of point guard, was let go just prior to the start of the season. I thought Tony Douglas at the time might have a chance to make this team. When Damian Wilkins was signed, I thought this is clearly a training camp body. I mean, just look at the numbers, 37 years old and out of the league for 4 years. Who does that? And with someone with his pedigree and his name, you would think if he could play, he would have played in the last two or three seasons. But when I watch practice, there's one guy that is probably hitting three-pointers as consistently as anyone, and that's Damian Wilkins, and that's his play on the floor. And I think he was really brought in for more of a veteran leadership type of presence. And then Glenn Robinson III goes down, and he's given an opportunity in that second unit, and he'll get some playing time this week. And I think it's a true testament to the work he's put in, staying in shape, and I think he can be a real positive influence on a team that is looking to me like they have a number of positive influences.
Yeah, I think so too, and I think maybe even more importantly, a player like Damian Wilkins comes at this time right now, because in general, the Pacers are really young, and they don't have, you know, we've seen, for example, and we've talked about it on the podcast, Philadelphia, who had a way bigger rebuild than the Pacers are going to go through, and they never, they originally, until this year, didn't put veterans around them, and I think they might second guess that. They might do that over if they had a different way to do it. Reddick's coming in now. I think they've realized that, whereas a team like Minnesota went the other route and Tayshaun Prince and Kevin Garnett were playing with a lot of those young guys. And I think that's the kind of role that Wilkins can fill. And you talk about, you know, ultimately talent level is what wins in this league. But you mentioned a little bit of the chemistry and what you're seeing on the floor. I think last year's team probably never came together from a chemistry standpoint like they would have. We were waiting for that to happen all season long, and then I think, you know, by the end of the year we kind of realized, okay, maybe this might not happen for them. And it's still, you know, a couple days before the regular season and the games matter, but this does feel like a significant difference from a chemistry standpoint, whether it's on the floor, off the floor. And I think a lot of that starts with Miles Turner. He just simple things, and these maybe don't translate directly to wins and losses, but seeing him make a post, hey, we have Fan Jam coming out tonight, would love to see you guys here at the Fieldhouse, and then following up after that. And that's different from what we've seen from, you know, some of the guys who have been Pacers leaders before. I think you know, we know how mature Miles is and how wise beyond his years he is, but you're starting to see him take over from a leadership standpoint, which is really wild to think he's 21 years old and thrust in this role. But I think you're seeing a togetherness early on in training camp and into the preseason, and hopefully that carries over. And I think maybe the biggest credit to that comes from Miles.
It is easy to see why Miles has developed such a big following and has such a large fan base because of the way he carries himself. Fans like to see things like that on social media. They like to see and hear from a player who genuinely likes being here and wants the best for Indianapolis and Central Indiana, and specifically for the Indiana Pacers. And you referenced leadership. Last week I had a chance to sit down and conduct an interview with Hall of Famer George McGinnis, and I asked him about a number of topics about his induction. We'll have that interview for you on Pacers Live pregame on Wednesday. But at the end of the interview, I wanted to ask his thoughts on the current team and also about Miles Turner. And we'll share this throughout the course of this season on Fox Sports Indiana. But he said, I asked if he had any advice for Miles as he was getting ready to take over as sort of the face of the team and the leadership role. And he said, well, first I would say is keep doing what you're doing, because people like you, people gravitate to you. The fans like your enthusiasm. They like what you're doing on and off the floor. And as Miles continues to grow and what the Pacers hope is turn into an NBA star and a perennial all-star, to not change and to kind of have that enthusiasm. So we've seen that off the floor. What I've seen on the floor, and I just watched practice on Monday, different times during that practice, he was the voice that I heard when it was the end of a drill, the clock was winding down, where they put 5 minutes on the clock, maybe there's 30 seconds left. It was Miles who was clapping and yelling, keep working, guys, keep working, fellas. They were doing a transition up and down drill. Thaddeus Young knocked down a three. Miles wasn't on the floor at that time. He was taking a break. But you heard Miles's voice say, good shot, Thad. I think that positivity is really contagious, and it's what maybe I think is one of the most things I'm looking forward to watching on the floor this year, is seeing that spread to the games. I think back to the last few years, every year during training camp, you are positive. And so that's where I think we have to maybe caution ourselves just a little bit. We were excited last year for the start of the season. There was a lot of anticipation for some of those new players and how that team would gel together. But you're right, it just never really happened. And I think this team, maybe they won't win right away as much as they would like, but I think they have a chance to be a cohesive unit, and that can only help as you get farther along into the season.
All right, well, if you followed our podcast throughout last year, throughout the offseason, this is year two, I guess, officially. One thing that we've implemented in almost all of these is some sort of pick three topic, and it came from let's reintroduce this, because we might have new fans that are starting here for the first time, and this came from your love of horse racing.
Yeah, you know, we had to find something that we could do on each and every show, and pick three was an easy way for us to pick a topic and have three answers, one mine, one yours, and one group selection. And that's a little bit similar to horse racing in that sometimes if you're with a group of friends or family members at maybe Kentucky Derby Day or something like that, you can do a pick three where you each get a chance to pick your favorites and you combine them, and you've got to get three straight races correct to hit the pick three. Some say pick six. That's harder to do, to get six races in a row. We'll just focus on three. A pick three is a good, fun, also sometimes profitable play, so that a good way for us to get started.
So our pick three to start off the 2017-2018 season, three most intriguing players to watch in the early part of the season. This doesn't necessarily mean your three best players, but the three players that interest you the most. I'll let you start.
I feel like this topic lends itself to maybe an under-the-radar type of selection, because we talk so much about Miles Turner. Lance Stephenson has been in the news so much, or not really in the news, but in the sports discussion, in the Pacers discussion. But someone that I'm thinking maybe hasn't gotten that much talk, hasn't generated as many headlines in the training camp and in the preseason, would be Corey Joseph. And while in the offseason, when that deal was done and C.J. Miles was a sign and trade with the Raptors to bring Corey Joseph, as much as I was disappointed in seeing CJ go, because I think you and I both have a great appreciation for what CJ does on and off the floor. I was excited to have someone who you're bringing in really as a backup point guard, but someone that is really, to me, maybe one of the best. If you're calling him a backup point guard, you're saying he's maybe one of the best in the NBA, because you look at what he was able to do with Toronto when Kyle Lowry was out and how he could really keep that unit going, and it was like they didn't even miss a beat when Corey Joseph was on the floor. Most intriguing, though, to me is because when I've watched the preseason games and some of the practices, and that second unit is out there as a group, a lot of times he's not the point guard. I'm seeing Lance Stephenson bring the ball up and down the floor, really start the offense. But I haven't seen any negativity from Corey, and I think he's accepting that role just a little bit. And I think there'll be times where he's on the floor and Lance isn't. And honestly, intriguing, because I'm curious to see what his role will be and how he adjusts to what his new role is and the new teammates, and seeing if he can just continue to produce like he did in Toronto. Most intriguing player, Corey Joseph.
Yeah, I'm with you on Corey Joseph certainly being up there. My pick is going to be Bojan Bogdanovic, and I think we know what Bojan is. He's a really good shooter. He's one of the best pure shooters in the league. He's had a lot of good games against the Pacers. But for me, the biggest question coming into this season, and there's so many of them in the NBA right now, is how the Pacers defend when they have to go against, you know, top-tier wings. That's not necessarily going to be the case right out of the gates with Brooklyn or with Portland. Those teams have good players, especially that backcourt in Portland. But when you start to face, you know, the top wings in the league, that was never really a question before. It was always, well, that's Paul George, if he's healthy, he's guy. Now the Pacers have to figure that out, and Bojan, self-admittedly, as a weakness, is his foot speed, and he says he's worked on that. He says it's gotten better. I think the Pacers can mix and match. Part of the best part, I think, about having a lot of depth is, you know, if Lance needs to start a game, or if someone needs to start a game to, or play or mix around with that lineup to help guard teams like that, they can. But you know, we know Bojan's going to be a good shooter. He's going to be someone that has his defender that has to stay draped on him at all times around the three-point line, which helps with spacing. My question is his defense, and if they're playing top-level wings, can he produce at enough level on defense that his offense makes up for it? And if not, are they moving Thad? Are they moving Lance in? With Glenn Robinson the third out, that was a natural transition there as well, and they don't have that. So, you know, Bojan, I think, was a significant pickup coming into this offseason. But when you look at Bojan and you look at what Paul George were and was, two very different style of players. And I think Bojan has a couple strengths that Paul doesn't, but Paul on the defensive end certainly was, you know, a good player there and someone you just automatically threw at those guys. And that's something that not only Bojan, but the coaching staff, maybe some of the guys coming off the bench are going to have to figure out.
And it's a fair point. You have to be careful, though, not to say, can Bojan do what Paul George did?
Right.
There's no comparison, really, in those two players. And you said, you know, he's going to hit shots. That's what I'm most intrigued to see, because in training camp, in the preseason games, he hasn't really felt comfortable, hasn't really shot the three-point shot with the way that I think that everyone expects him to. So I do look forward to seeing some of those catch fire games where he knocks down five or six threes, and there haven't been that many opportunities to see a Pacer have those in recent years. The combo pick, I think someone that we shared a similar feeling about on Pacers Weekly on Saturday, that you can still listen to if you'd like to download that on the Pacer Sound podcast. And I think you phrased the question differently on Saturday, was who will generate the fan club or a growing fan base the quickest. And you said Domas Sabonis, and I kind of followed up, and that was the easy pick and the obvious pick to me, because every time I watch this team, whether it's in practice or through the first four or five games, he's the one guy that I kind of can't take my eyes off of, because he kind of makes plays. He's just the kind of guy that fans in Indiana are absolutely going to love, and it's hard to think about comparisons. He's got a little bit of Jeff Foster in him, but he's maybe a little more polished offensively, and I've seen him knock down shots, and I heard the criticism after last season that he, you know, players on other teams backed off him because he wasn't consistent enough of a shooter, but a lot of that was just players were devoting so much of their attention to Russell Westbrook. So I think he can score, but the pick and roll is fascinating with he and Lance Stephenson, and I've seen it so many times, those two working together, and I can't wait to see it in the game. Intriguing player to watch, Domas Sabonis.
Yeah, and even in Fan Jam, where there's negative amounts of defense being played, you could tell that those two had some chemistry going on. There's a couple times where Lance went into the lane and kind of flipped it up, and I was wondering, where's he going with that? And then all of a sudden, Domas was underneath the basket and dunking it, or a no-look pass from Lance, and wondering, what's Lance doing with that? And then Sabonis was on the other end of that. And you mentioned his high IQ. He's strong. He can knock down the outside shot. He's never going to be this super flashy player, but I think he's the kind of guy, as you said, fans will really appreciate. And with a team, we have a question about this coming up, and we'll delve into this a little bit more. With a team that last year struggled to rebound, and at least will start the season with the same starting front court that they did last year, a guy like him coming off the bench, again, it's preseason and you can't use numbers too strongly, but his rebounding rate in the preseason was terrific, and a guy like him coming off the bench could make a significant difference on the glass. Which just there were so many games last year where the Pacers played even with their opponent or oftentimes a little bit better than their opponent, but they just got killed on the glass, and the glass was holding them back in so many ways. It was their, you know, weakest link in the chain, and you're only as strong as your weakest link if you go with those kind of cliches, but that's what it was for the Pacers last year, and I think he brings a significant difference there on the glass.
He may not start, he may not be on the floor when a game starts, when the season starts, and he may not even be there in January, but he will not be hurting for minutes. He will get a significant amount of playing time, and he will be a big-time contributor this season and really on into the future.
All right, we're about 15 minutes here, I think, into this podcast, and we want to get into the Q&A portion, the mailbag portion. Personally, when I listen to podcasts, I like these things that are podcasts that are about 40 to 45 minutes because I get listener fatigue. Maybe that's just the millennial in me, but I like podcasts that go about 40 minutes. So we've got 15 minutes in. We will ask questions and debate these until we hit 40 minutes, and we'll see how many we get to. This first one comes from Sean Flannery, and he asks, thoughts of how big of an impact EK and Abogu could potentially have during his rookie season. And that's a really tough one to hit on right out of the gates because he's a player that hasn't seen a lot of time. Didn't see a lot of time at UCLA, didn't see a lot of time in Pacers training camp, had a little bit of preseason play where I thought he fared well, but this is as up in the air of a question as I think we're going to have on the show here today.
I would not envision EK having a big impact during this rookie season, but I would just monitor how he looks, even on the bench, because he's a specimen. I mean, when you talk about someone that's 18 years old and how defined his arms are, and you've seen him knock down shots, and he came into the offseason, was not 100%, was injured during really what's interesting was a pre-draft workout at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, an injury that wasn't serious, but it was serious enough to make him no longer able to compete in any other team's pre-draft workouts. And so the Pacers knew what that injury was. They were comfortable. Obviously, they helped him through it the day he was injured. I remember him walking off the floor at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, and he went the other direction. And I'm not even sure whether the media that were assembled had a chance to talk to him because it was something that he was dealing with. But he's someone that you can – he doesn't even have the two-way contract, and we may discuss those just a little bit as well. He's not someone that has a limited amount of time to be with the Pacers, but I could see him getting still some playing time in Fort Wayne just because he's not a two-way contract guy. I think he still has the opportunity to go get some reps in Fort Wayne, and I think he's someone that has a bright future, and you don't even worry about whether he contributes this year. But to be perfectly honest with the question, Sean, thanks for writing in. I wouldn't expect a lot on the floor in terms of heavy minutes this season, really, or even regular rotation contributions from EK. And if so, it's probably a sign that the season's not going the way you'd like.
And he's really raw, and he has some measurables, though, that it almost makes him – stash might not even be fair because he might play some minutes this year because of his tools and his strength and his quickness, but he had the second-best wingspan of any player drafted in the last draft, and among centers, he had the second-best vertical leap. So it was all on measurables. They didn't see much of him. Even at UCLA, he was raw for UCLA in that last year. So it's going to be a process for him where it's probably going to take a little bit more time. He's more of a project. TJ Leaf maybe a little bit more ready to go right away. But I think he has a lot of potential value, and I think they're going to want to see him play that out and start to build some of that skill set. So maybe he does play a significant amount in Fort Wayne.
You inevitably have three or four guys dressed for each game that are not expected to play in that game. And I think with those three or four roster spots, it's important to have a little bit of a mix. You've got someone that is like Damian Wilkins. That's a veteran presence that does not care if he plays, but if he's called upon, he will be ready. And you've got, you want to have also guys like EK who are part of your future that you want to groom them slowly. Think of it like a quarterback that's drafted high in the NFL that maybe you want them to just watch for a year. And I think that'd be perfect for EK. And, you know, it's kind of what they did the last couple of years with Rakeem Christmas, but they determined through watching him in practice mostly and just that he wasn't the kind of fit for what they were looking for. You have another opportunity with another big man in EK that you'll be able to watch and try to groom. And then in a couple, 2 or 3 years, maybe you've got something. If you don't, then you try it again. But I think it's a good risk, or it's a low-risk situation, and it's a perfect person to have in that spot.
All right, why don't you take pick one of these next ones? We don't have to go in order. These actually I've just copied and pasted on the sheet in the order of when we got them. So if you want to jumble around here, we don't have to go in order.
Well, let's stick with the big man theme, and this comes from Sweet Up Down 06. I don't have a avatar picture on this printout.
No, so that was my fault. These are just.
Regardless, Sweet Up Down 06, I like it. How much offense is going to run through at Original Turner? Props for giving Miles a tweet on there on your question. With the clear assumption he is taking the next step of being a great player in the NBA, how much offense will run through Miles? I think this is interesting because with every star player, you think that the coach is responsible for generating offense for that player and having 5 or 6 plays that are meant to get that person a shot. Miles is going to be your biggest offensive presence, but personally, and this may sound like a little bit of a cop-out answer, I think this is one of these teams that's going to make the extra pass more often than not than just be locked into Miles is supposed to score this play. Now, coming out of timeouts or in critical situations, Miles is going to be that guy, but Miles is not going to be afraid to, if he's a play's drawn up for him, he gets it, and as he gets ready to shoot, maybe he sees someone open under the basket and he alters the plan and throws it underneath. I've seen a number of extra passes in practice through the first 3 weeks of training camp, plays that you just didn't see in recent years because in the past when the shot clock went to 7 or 8, it was just very easy to kind of clear out and to see if Paul George could make something happen. I think that more often than not this season, you're going to see the offense continue to flow with 7 or 6 on the shot clock, and you're going to see an extra pass made. So I think that Miles is your go-to guy, but I don't think it'll be one of those things where if there's a game that maybe he has 10 points, it's not a bad thing. There are going to be other guys that are going to be able to score, and I think he has to be assertive, but not overly assertive, if that makes sense.
He actually hit on this at practice today, and he kind of made a comment about how it's not going to be like last year where there's one guy who's the clear-cut number one, and then he kind of said, you know, I don't mean that as any sort of insult to Paul. That's just what the Pacers needed out of Paul last year, and that's what they did. I think what's going to end up happening is Turner and Oladipo are going to kind of be 1A and 1B. But look, we've seen Collison, and Collison's a small point guard. He's a good passer, but he can shoot, and he's not afraid to shoot. You know, Thaddeus Young certainly has his NBA offensive game down, and he's healthy now, and that's significant. And Boyan's a shooter. So I don't think you're going to have any sort of scenario last year where you have one player who's taking a significant majority of shots. In fact, it would be interesting to track. It'd be interesting when we're doing this and it's game 50, if you say, okay, how many times has Turner led the Pacers in shooting? And how many times has it been Oladipo? And how many times has it been Thad or Collison or Boyan?
In terms of attempts.
Just attempts, yeah. And I think it's going to be a lot more spread out. And I think Turner maybe has the edge to lead that right out of the gates. Oladipo too, possibly, but I think it's going to have a very different feel. Even if Turner is this guy, I think it's going to have a very different feel from when Paul was that guy the last handful of years.
Let's change course or alter the course just a little bit, and we'll read the question and you'll answer it. So I'll read the question, you answer it, vice versa. This one comes from one of our favorite guests and or listeners, and also someone who generates quite a bit of Pacers content as well, at the Corner 3 Ross. Follow those guys on Twitter, and a great podcast, Pacers podcast, NBA content podcast as well. They're saying, what do you expect from TJ Leaf this season? What is his ceiling, Pat? You're on the hot seat.
This one's tough for me because my original reaction was that he's somebody that might need a year to get stronger, to, you know, kind of get acclimated to the NBA game. And I'm also one of the people that harp on, you know, let's not take too much from the preseason. Let's not take too much from watching training camp. There's a reason, you know, that these games are preseason. But then you watch him score 18 points in a quarter, and it makes you wonder, well, you know, maybe he can have a role this year. And, you know, with some of the injuries, people have wondered who's going to play the three. And I think we have one of those questions coming up about the three position. We touched about it with Boyan a little bit. I don't think TJ's ready to play the three, but I think he's quick enough to at least play the four and not be a liability. And, you know, if you have his size in terms of height and you can shoot, this is a guy that shot 47% at UCLA from the three-point line last year. And if he can shoot that three regularly, there's usually a spot for that guy somewhere. So I would say I caution myself to not overlook the preseason, but the preseason has changed my outlook on him a little bit because I think he is a little bit more ready than I thought. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's coming in and playing some – the backup four initially is going to be Sabonis, but it's possible that we see some lineups, I think, with Sabonis at the five and TJ at the four. And I wouldn't be surprised if he was playing, you know, 12 or so minutes a game. And if he's contributing, I don't think they would attempt to take that away from him.
I've already seen more from TJ Leaf in terms of regular rotation playing time than I guess I expected when training camp started. And while defense is still going to be something to monitor, I think really what you're going to see, and you're really going to be able to answer this question after the first five, six games, because I think that the plan now, and I could be wrong about this, this is just from observations, is the plan is to throw him out there, let him to be a part of that second man or that second unit, and see how he adjusts. And if he can hold up against NBA fours, and if he can not be a big liability defensively, he will continue to see playing time. But I would say, similar to your question, our question earlier about EK, is if that doesn't happen and he's not in the rotation in December and maybe some of the playing time has been taken away from him, I would not panic or freak out, because you have to consider the ages of these guys and look at the last three or four years in the NBA, and rookies on good teams, just they don't play that much. They're not, by and large, contributors outside of maybe the top three or four picks, and that's not what TJ Leaf was. So I don't think you drafted TJ Leaf with the intentions of having him being a star player in his rookie season, but it looks like right now he is going to be a contributor. We will just have to see if he is ready. If he's not, I expect him to be somebody in the future that can help.
So good question there coming from the corner three, Ross. So one thing I wanted to, and I was finding that stat right now as you were closing on that, even Paul George, you know, averaged under 8 points in his rookie season with the Pacers. So that's a guy who obviously turned into a multi-time all-star, and he wasn't playing huge minutes or contributing in a huge way in his rookie season, but I think we all saw his potential then. So it's something to always keep in mind with rookies, and remember, this is a guy who was mid late-ish first round and not a top 10 pick either. So there are certainly things about his game that need to develop, but I also think there's parts of his game that are NBA ready right now, and I think he's going to get a chance at least to prove that he should play some NBA minutes. All right, let's move here to let's go with Joe Emmert, who is our Pacers Weekly super fan. He leads, I think, in Pacers Weekly tweet questions, if that was a contest. So, Joe, thank you.
Congratulations, Joe.
Yes,
and he actually listened to one of our podcasts all the way through and asked for
that picture, right?
The picture of Pat with the Bob Barker microphone.
So Joe asks, which now that we're down this track, let's just give a quick promo for that. Saturdays 10 to 11 every Saturday morning, you hear Jeremiah
on
there.
Do you use a Bob Barker microphone on Pacers Weekly?
I don't. They've got a microphone in there.
Are you using one right now?
No, I'm not.
I guess I can see that. Right.
Of 10 to 11 every Saturday morning. We'd love to have you as a part of that show. We take callers and Twitter questions. 1070 The Fan, 107.5 FM if you're in Indy. 1070thefan.com. We talk Pacers basketball for an hour every Saturday morning. Jeremiah always closes the show live with us, so we'd love to have you as part of that. Normally, sometimes we get to wake him up at like 5 a.m.
This week will be a little bit of a wake up. Yeah. And I'll be up, but I'll be in Miami. And I was thinking about this trip after the game on Friday. Miami's not a short flight.
No.
So, you know, it'll probably be landing around 1, then you got to get to the hotel and you got to call it a night. So, but I will be up. I'll probably have already had a jog or walk on the beach, or not the beach, but at least by the water by the time I'm ready to talk to you.
Whenever you take a job, there's always those other duties as assigned at the very bottom, and your other duties as assigned are the wake-up calls on Saturday mornings in
different cities. It could be a lot worse. I'm happy to do it.
All right, so let's hit Joe's question. It's a two-part question. Can we rebound well enough to fast break consistently? Really good question. And how well can we defend the three spot, which is something we hit on a little bit.
Double question from Joe.
So maybe you can hit on the three spot a little bit less, since we talked about that a little bit with Boyan. But that's the rebounding thing. I like how he phrases this, because rebounding is not only important for keeping possessions and not allowing your opponents to take more shots, but if the Pacers are going to run more like they want to and they're going to have more fluid of an offense like they want to, they're going to need to rebound, especially on the defensive end.
This is a team that does not have that, you know, dominant rebounder, someone who maybe that's the one or two things that they do best. You think about Miles Turner and all the things that he does well. There were times last year where I would talk to Popeye Jones, and it would be after a practice where he was constantly reminding Miles, you can't forget about rebounding. Thaddeus Young is someone that I think tries really hard to rebound, but it's maybe not his strength. And so if your fours and your fives are that way and you've got Bogdanović as your starting three, you know it's going to be a potential issue. And I think the thing to watch for is you don't always want, especially offensively, everyone crashing the boards.
But on defense, everyone has to do their part. You can't just rely on the bigs to get the rebounds. You've got to have your ones and your twos. Whoever's out there in the backcourt, they've got to be able to rebound. I look at someone like Victor Oladipo. I think he's someone who can rebound well for his position, and it was something that Popeye Jones stopped, and I can remember the very first practice of this training camp. He reminded the guys, many of them who weren't even here last season, but he reminded them of what the Pacers' statistical analysis showed for rebounding last season and how that had to improve, and it'll be maybe one of the most important stats to follow early in the season.
I believe they were 27th. And rebounding, depending on what you look at, rebounding
he
rate.
He said 26, and okay. I actually was one of the things I was going to do in the next couple of days was to ask him which number or which metric he was using for that and to just clarify that. But the number that stands out to me was, and he wants them to remember, so I'm guessing if you ask any player, even the one that wasn't here, what the Pacers finish in rebounding last year, they've probably heard it enough to where they're going to know 26th.
And then defending the three spot is a thing we hit on with Boyan, but that's to me that's the biggest question heading into the season, is when they take on those elite-level wings or those top-level wings, which there are so many in the NBA, and can the Pacers find a way to slow them down? I think that's a big thing they're going to have to answer, and Thaddeus Young maybe has part of that. Lance Stephenson maybe has part of that. Glenn Robinson was an answer there potentially, but we know Glenn's now out 3 to 4 months, and that probably takes him into 2018. So it's a question that they've got to answer fairly quickly. And, you know, when you have Dan Burke, you always like your chances on being creative and finding different ways. But I think that's something that they're going to have to do. They're going to have to be creative. They're going to have to mix and match and try a few different things, try a few different schemes, and see how that works. Again, early on, Brooklyn,
Portland,
and Miami, that's not a huge issue. But it's going to come up sooner rather than later.
And you would have to hope defensively they play better than they did it. Fan jam, right?
Well,
we didn't see much defensive fan jam, but that's to be expected. So if you came to that game and you're saying, oh, this team's gonna have trouble defending, don't hit the panic button.
It's always Dan Burke's like bottom of how they can play on defense. I think still my favorite, you guys have done the last couple of years a Dan Burke collage piece at the end, and I think my favorite quote he's ever told you was when he said that we were playing defense in the first half at Portland, coincidentally, like it was fan jam. I think that was my favorite quote he's ever given.
And I think this was in December, so it wasn't it like was. Fan jam was.
No. Now, we had kind of forgotten about fan jam. Oh, yeah.
Dan doesn't forget about fan jam. So, yeah, hopefully the defense and the rebounding will be better on into the regular season. How about a question for you, Pat, from at Jose Reynoso 23. What are the Pacers' future plans with Darren Collison and the starting point guard position? Is Corey Joseph the future?
Yeah, I think it's Darren Collison, and my guess for a couple of months is they're going to stick with that and make sure they want to stick with that. I think Nate is somebody that likes to put people in roles and give them a chance to fill out those roles and then maybe reassess once there have been a quality, a number of games to reassess. Darren Collison's been a starting point guard in the NBA before. He was most recently a starting point guard, and he's going to be the starting point guard here, and I think he deserves that. And I think, you know, odds are he probably keeps that role, but I think Corey Joseph is really going to push him. I think Corey Joseph has played behind Tony Tony Parker. He's played behind Kyle Lowry, and I think he views this potentially as an opportunity to get some starters' minutes. I think this could be a position, too, where if you say, you know, the average starter maybe plays 32 minutes, maybe Collison is playing 27, 28, and Joseph is playing more like 22, and the numbers are much more closer. But somebody does have to start. It's going to be Collison right off the bat, and I think Joseph is going to push him, and I think it's going to create a tough decision for Nate, but I think it's going to be a good decision because you've got two guys playing well.
It's one of those scenarios that Nate talked about in terms of competition, and Kevin Pritchard has referenced this as well, that he even started training camp saying, open competition, with the exception of maybe Victor Oladipo and Miles Turner, those guys were going to start, but he wanted there to be competition for those other spots. Now, it does not seem as though he's had much change in terms of his first five and his second unit, with the exception of injury to Glenn Robinson III, forcing Damian Wilkins to get some more playing time. But Corey Joseph knows he has that opportunity to play, and I might even take it a step further than what you said with your, you know, numbers analogy with minutes. I'm going to say there are going to be games that Corey Joseph could play more than Darren Collison, and foul trouble always maybe factors into things just a little bit, but if he's the hot hand and he's playing well and he's got it going, I think he can play more than Darren Collison, and I think Darren Collison is a veteran, a little bit like Thaddeus Young, in that, you know, when you put this team together and you were thinking about how the Pacers were going to fare this year, you wondered maybe were Darren Collison and Thaddeus Young the kind of guys you wanted to have if you were thinking a little bit more bigger picture. But I think that those two guys being in your starting lineup are proof this team and this organization is trying as much as they can to win games this year. You can say what you want about that strategy, but I think that it's a prudent move, and I think he's a good kind of starting point guard that will handle this well. And I think Corey Joseph, playing with something to prove, he has a player option on his contract for next year. But, you know, with that situation, I think the Pacers see whether he's a fit, see whether you like him. With many of their acquisitions this offseason, they want to have a little bit of flexibility. They want to have somebody come in, see whether they fit, see not only whether they like the player, but whether the player likes being here. And then if there is a fit, then you maybe decide to do something long term. But it would be impossible right now to look at Corey Joseph and say with any certainty, yes, for sure, he's a point guard of the future. He definitely has more NBA time in front of him than maybe Darren Collison does, but you're just going to let this play out, and you've got the flexibility if it doesn't work out, and if either side isn't perfectly happy, you've got a little bit of flexibility. So the reason I had him as one of my most intriguing players is I think that this could go a number of different directions, and I think there is a high ceiling, and, you know, you have to be cognizant of what the floor is as well.
It's interesting how the two times Darren Collison has been here, he's immediately had someone who's a backup point guard who is of quality too that's going to push him. And Collison had the starting job when George Hill was here. And then, you know, George Hill obviously eventually became the Pacers' starting point guard. And now round two for Darren Collison. Let's do one more question, and then we'll focus on the upcoming couple games we have, and we will get out of here for the preview podcast. This one comes from a couple of people asking a similar question. Hank 0470, Connor O'Malley, both those two asking something along the lines of this. How soon do you see Sabonis to the starting line, or will Sabonis move to the starting line? It's a similar question we just did with Joseph and with Darren Collison, but this is a legitimate question because Sabonis was a starter on a playoff team and a good team last year in Oklahoma City.
The only thing that I'll add about Sabonis, I feel like I've talked quite a bit about him in different venues and will continue to over the course of the first couple weeks of the season, is when you think about Sabonis, I thought of him as a four, and that's really primarily what he played with Oklahoma City. You know, he started 66 games for a team that was a Western Conference playoff team, and I think so many people are underestimating him because maybe he ran out of gas a little bit and maybe he wasn't a perfect fit in the playoffs for that team. But 66 starts on a playoff team in the Western Conference is nothing to forget about. And so, but he did that at the four. And from what we've seen during training camp and during the preseason is him playing a lot of the backup five. Now, I don't know that the Pacers are going to be in a big hurry to say, you've got to start. I think that the starting and coming off the bench, we've already referenced it with Collison and Joseph. And, I mean, if Glenn Robinson III was healthy, I'd be saying the same thing about the three position with he and Bojan Bogdanović, in that some games Glenn could play more than Bogdanović, even though he wasn't
quote-unquote, the starter. But this is what I think about Sabonis is I'm looking forward to seeing him play with Miles some. And, I mean, because that is really, if you're going to be perfectly honest, and I love Thaddeus Young, and I'm glad he's here, and everything I've heard has been spectacular. But look 2 or 3 years from now down the road. And if everything pans out the way Kevin Pritchard in the front office hope it does, and I have seen nothing to think that it won't, you're looking at a starting front court that really is Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis. And it could even be Sabonis playing some at the five and Miles at the four. And just watch in the first couple weeks of the season when those guys are on the floor together, because that's kind of the long-term view of this team. And I hope Thaddeus is here for the rest of his career. And I think he's someone that can start maybe down the line. Maybe he comes off the bench. He is a great teammate, and he is someone that, you know, I never want to push out of any position. So I don't think it matters when Sabonis starts. I'd perfectly be fine if Thaddeus Young started 82 games this year. But during some of those games, we're going to see Miles on the floor with Sabonis, and that's what I'm really looking forward to watch, and then projecting that out over the next 2 or 3 years.
I think if you're like me and you like Domantas Sabonis, you're going to get plenty of opportunity. I think we tend to overvalue who starts just because it has so much of an impact of how you look at a game and how you compare two teams. But if Domantas Sabonis is playing 25 minutes and he's playing both the backup four and the backup five and some with Turner and they're mixing and matching, I mean, he might come in as the backup four, and then when the next line comes in, could slide over to five and stay out on the court for an extended period of time. So I think they want to get him 20-plus minutes, and I think whether that comes, you know, whether his name is being called by Jerry Baker in the pregame announcements or whether it's not, I think he's going to get plenty of opportunity to play.
And whether it's Domas or Domantas.
Yeah, we still haven't figured that one out.
We talked about that yesterday.
We were debating that yesterday.
What are you going to do on Wednesday?
Right now,
you're doing your first hit in the third quarter, and he already has a double-double, and – and Mark says, during the commercial break, Pat, you can take this one out of break, and you've got your Sabonis little nugget that you're going to share with the radio listeners. What are you saying?
I think naturally what I try to do is go with whatever Mark says, because I think it's weird if Mark's calling him one thing and I'm calling him another thing. So I will probably yield to him, and maybe we transfer at some point in the season. But my guess is he's going to call him Domantas. So if that's the case, I think I'm going to call him Domantas. But as we were discussing, you know, in the locker room, it can be a little bit more informal. You're talking to the player right after the game. You know, I'm going, thanks, Jeremiah. All right, Domas. I think that would naturally make some sense, too, especially when you're talking to him and he is fine with that nickname.
Kind of like Jeremiah and JJ.
Do you say JJ? Sometimes I say JJ, yeah.
Louisville.
I try to just do Louisville.
Me as well. But I don't shudder if I hear Louisville.
No, I don't either.
I think Domas is good either way, but he did tell me that it's technically Domas.
As long as I heard a couple people calling him Damo, and I don't really want that to be a thing. Because Damo's already a person.
There's only one Damo for me.
There's not another Damo.
Shout out Damo Rudez.
I'm sure he listens. All right, let's close this and look at the matchups the Pacers have coming up on Wednesday night. The Brooklyn Nets visit Bankers Life Fieldhouse. We know they've really, really struggled, probably more than any team in the NBA over the last 4 or 5 years. They look a lot different, though, and part of me wants to finally start saying, okay, maybe they're not going to be in the basement anymore, but then it's tough to say, okay, you're going to get rid of Brook Lopez and anything is going to go up, because he was a really good player. I think a borderline all-star quality player, and they do lose him. Their projected starting five could look something like Jeremy Lin, D'Angelo Russell, Alan Crabb, Damari Carroll, Timofey Mozgov, which is decent. You know, those are NBA quality level players, and each one has their own kind of different story. What is Russell? You know, Alan Crabb, is he starter quality? But all of a sudden, I think for the first time, you look at Brooklyn and you say, okay, they've got an 8, 9, 10 deep, where at least you have guys that are proven or have a lot of potential.
I'm interested to see that backcourt with Lin and Russell, because if you think about Jeremy Lin and you take the Lin sanity portion of his career out of the equation, he's still been very effective, but he's been injury prone. And when he's been healthy, he's been a spark. And I can remember at least one or maybe two times in the last couple of years where the Pacers lost to the Nets, and it feels like Jeremy Lin did some of the damage. Jeremy Lin is someone who still has some capability, and D'Angelo Russell is someone who has something to prove, much like many of the Pacers. This is not a team that we faced the Nets in different times in the past where they've been on a 15 or 18 game losing streak, I think. And opening night, everyone's fired up and excited. And you see crazy things happen on opening night, but this is one of those games that you hope the team that maybe is supposed to win does win, because it's an important time for the Pacers to get off to a good start, because the schedule gets very difficult very quickly.
And it does get more difficult on Friday night. The Portland Trailblazers are here. Unfortunately for Indiana, it's a one-game suspension for C.J. McCollum and not a two-game suspension.
You're advocating for two.
No, I'm actually okay if the answer was zero. But the Pacers are the first team that C.J. McCollum is going to face in the regular season. He was suspended for coming off the bench in the preseason. And you look at this might not affect the game so much on Friday, but one thing that interests me about their team is Al-Farouq Aminu is likely going to get starting power forward minutes, but you could have Noah Vonleh and Caleb Swanigan battling for backup power forward minutes there. And there's Hoosier versus Boilermaker going at it, and Swanigan was their first-round draft pick, and Noah Vonleh, a former Indiana Hoosier. And we remember they had the Yusuf Nurkic trade, which happened right around the deadline last year, and he really took off in Portland. And that's been, I think, a really good trade for them, especially because they got the first-round pick out of that trade, too. I think they might have got the better player and the better pick.
Yeah, Nurkic is someone who has a chance to really, I think, be a difference maker on a team that, when you thought about the Blazers for so many years, you just kind of thought about McCollum and Lillard and being maybe weaker in other parts. And if he can anchor that front line for Portland, it'll be interesting to watch moving forward. A number of familiar faces, really, in these first two games. You mentioned Vonleh and Swanigan, Pat Connaughton of Notre Dame. You've got Evan Turner, who played for the
Pacers. Missing a Ball State Cardinal, a Butler Bulldog.
Tyler Zeller from the Nets.
There you go.
Backup center for Brooklyn, of course, former Indiana Mr. Basketball. So interesting storylines, and should be a fun way to start the season. When the schedule came out, I was just – you always immediately wonder, are you starting at home or on the road, and do you have a chance to get a little early momentum? Got to win at least one of those two, and then maybe a win in two. How would that be?
Yeah. You start off with a couple of wins, and you have some early confidence, which I think is important when you have a young team. In Miami, I think certainly a winnable road game for the first road game of the season. Let's get a couple of things we want to promote before we finish this. I'll do the easy part because radio is a little bit simpler in with what we're doing. We're going to be on air, as always, 30 minutes before every game. That includes the opener. So if you're not able to get to a television, you can always catch us on the radio if you're out and about in the car. In Indy, it's 1070 The Fan, 107.5 FM. We will begin at 6:30 for the Pacers opener with the Kroger pregame show, and that will go throughout the game with Mark Boyle and Slick Leonard's call, and then Eddie White will be back with Pacers overtime going into the wee hours of the night, or whenever producer Jeff Burkett kicks him out of there. So that'll be our radio coverage, and it'll be the same as you are accustomed to. For TV, I just pulled this up because we just got the email sent out. You've got a Pacers season preview show, which, let's see, two of these have aired. So Monday at, well, that one's aired. Monday at noon is aired. So we have Tuesday at 1, Tuesday at 7:30, Wednesday at noon, and Wednesday at 5:30 leading into the broadcast, your Pacers preview show.
Really no excuse for you to not get a chance to watch this Pacers season preview show. It's kind of like when I produced a weekly high school sports show in high school, and I also had the power, surprisingly enough, to program the local access channel. So if I did a show I really liked, it pretty much was on all hours of the day. I think I programmed it at 10 to 5 and 7, and then maybe again at 11.
That's almost what this is.
So, yeah, there are, I think, in total 7 airings of that Pacers season preview show. And it's the first time we've done a show like this. So I was happy to be a part of that and to be able to share some good content with fans, get them excited. And a good interview, I think, with Chris Denari and Kevin Pritchard on that program. And if you forget until Wednesday and you're going to sit down and watch some of the opening night coverage, we always have a one-hour show before the season opener. We've got that again, but the final airing of that season preview show is the 30 minutes prior to the one-hour show. So technically, Fox Sports Indiana coverage gets underway at 5:30 Eastern on Wednesday. Then I'll be live at 6 o'clock wearing a different suit, I think, in a different location for that 6 to 7. And Pat Boylan just confirmed with our pregame producer extraordinaire Ken Southman that you'll be making an appearance on that one-hour show as well. So you've got a busy night with some TV duties, some radio duties, and then once again, Pat Boylan will be anchoring our post-game coverage, or not necessarily anchoring, but being the star of the post-game show coverage by interviewing the players inside the locker
room. Not necessarily anchoring and not necessarily being the star, but I do appreciate having a role back in the locker room this year. So that'll be our fourth year of doing that, and you on the post-game coverage and tossing down. And what I always look forward to when the season starts are those interviews early on, especially this year. We know Miles is usually pretty good. We know Thad's usually pretty good. But there's a locker room in there.
We've gotten
to talk.
Guys are,
right, who
yeah.
the go-to. And one thing that you can't really get a feel for unless you're in there is, you know, it's not just as easy as grab whoever we want, whenever we want. Oftentimes, you know, now that he's not here, we can probably speak to this a little bit. Paul was almost impossible to get last season. So if you ever had a time last year where you go, man, why aren't they talking to Paul George? We tried, but he would often take a shower, and his shower wouldn't be over until our post-game show was done, and we wouldn't get a chance to get him. You know, we are required on those players. They just have to make themselves available, and they don't have to make themselves available right away. So often you see some familiar faces. That's because those are guys that like to do their availability right away. And, of course, we try to get the most pertinent players that are available. But it's not quite as easy as just grabbing whoever we want. We are, of course, try to be really cognizant of their time, and we do put microphones, you know, right up in their face a couple minutes after the game ends. So it'll be good to get in there, kind of figure out who our go-to guys are, and hopefully I think we've got a good locker room for this kind of thing this year, and who we can talk to and having perspective on the game that just finished.
We've had good guys in really the entire time I've been in this position, but I'm sensing there were even guys in the last couple of years that just really did not enjoy the interviews, and I'm looking at this roster right now, and I'm not sure that we have any of those. And maybe, you know, it's not like we will sell them out when we notice those, but right now it seems like everybody's been pretty positive. I've yet to request an interview, and I haven't done as many because our actual coverage hasn't really started, but I always was disappointed sometimes if you request someone, and David Benner, Chrissy Myers, they've done a great job of always being accommodating, but sometimes you can tell when a player gives you a look or just they're not into it, and it's kind of a bad way to start the interview. And I don't see that from this team. We'll see what happens. It'll be fascinating to watch, and cannot wait to get things started on Wednesday.
All right, thank all of you for your questions. It was great turning this more into a mailbag and a discussion with you guys, so we appreciate all of that. Again, Fox Sports Indiana starting at 5:30 around the Bankers Life Radio Network at 6:30, 1070 The Fan in Indianapolis for opening night on Wednesday. Jeremiah, good to be talking about basketball games that are happening in a couple of days.
I think we did enough podcasting in the summer to kind of stay fresh, but get on a regular routine and think that we'll be doing this. And we're committed to this. We thank you for commenting when we're out in public or even on social media. It does help us know that, you know, people are listening and people are enjoying this, and it does spur us on to make sure we make this a regular thing. So I'm guessing right now we can make our plans for episode 2 now. I've got a whole day off on Monday in Minneapolis next week. It'll be a perfect time to analyze that opening week, and you know, not one of those cities that I think I'll be walking. I won't be walking along any beaches or anything. So I can make time to talk with you from Minnesota. So how about a little first week review early next week?
I like it. And we'll have games to talk about the next time we come to you. He's Jeremiah Johnson. I'm Pat Boylan. That'll wrap up the season preview Sideline Guys podcast.